This is a podcast from Consilio. We bring people together to create better places.
Hello and welcome to Poles Apart, the Consilio podcast where we take a look back at all the political, planning and policy developments from across the capital. I'm Nathan Parsad-Wyatt.
And I'm Luke Francis.
And this is our 10th episode, actually, after a few weeks off.
Can you believe it?
I know. 10 episodes, 3.5 months, 4 months, and some of you are still listening. So that's oh, hopefully, anyway.
So thank you.
But yeah, obviously, long weekend with the Queen's Jubilee celebration, so we didn't put an episode out last week, but we're back. And we've got a really interesting guest today, actually. So, Luke, do you want to talk about who we've got on?
So we are delighted to be joined shortly by Councillor Mette Cavan, who's the Cabinet Member for Environment and Transport over in Hackney. He's going to be talking about what the priorities are of the new administration. They did very well in the local election, so we'll be talking a little bit about what the priorities of the incoming administration are going to be, particularly in regard to their housing and infrastructure requirements, but also some of the challenges that Hackney, like every London borough, really are facing at the moment.
Absolutely. But before we kick off with that, we'll start with, I guess, the stories, the big political and planning stories. Well, I mean, it's not been a dull week nationally in politics at all, has it? I mean, you know, votes of no confidence in the leader of the Conservative Party, the current Prime Minister.
Were you surprised by the number of rebels?
I thought that if people were being true to themselves, it would be around that number. I just thought a few more people might have been whipped or beaten into submission to support the government at this time. But, I mean, I'm sure that everybody's been listening to lots of commentary about this over the last few days. But it does feel like the lack of one alternative, it seems to be the predominant reason why the Prime Minister is still the leader.
It seems to me like people didn't really have faith that there was a succession plan in place and that there was a sort of candidate-elect ready to step into the void.
And it would be a jump into the unknown. Mm. And I think there are lots of people, not unfairly, who think this probably isn't the time for that to take place. But there are also lots of other people who think that for all of the kind of commentary and decision-making and sort of attention that is being spent on Partygate and defending it and, you know, just battling to survive on a daily basis is also not addressing the really big issues of the day. So I think history tells us that once there's been a vote of no confidence,
the writing's on the wall.
Well, it doesn't always end well, but then Boris, as always, has been the great
survivor.
Yeah, the great survivor. So look, we won't dwell on it too much, but I think it helps nobody to have a destabilised government when we've got some really big challenges. So
at least it's put to bed for 12 months.
Well, I don't buy that either. I mean, ultimately, if a majority of MPs wrote to the 1922 committee and said, we do not want this person to lead us anymore, nobody's going to say, well, sorry, you already had a vote, you just change the rules and have another vote. So I think that's all. I think it might seem more important on paper than it actually is.
Well, the rule.
Yeah, because ultimately, if you've lost the confidence of half of the parliamentary party, it's very difficult to see how you govern, really.
But so look, watch this space.
Well, we'll see how that one plays out exactly. But bringing it sort of closer to home, we're now a month after the London local elections. You know, committees have been starting to happen, planning committees particularly. Cabinets have been formed and new priorities are starting to take shape across the piece. And I think one of the stories that's sort of become really important to us as we've been talking to just clients and various people in the industry is this big conversation about build costs and whether or not, even if you've got planning permission to do a lot of development, whether or not it's actually viable to build a lot of it at the moment. And there was an article this morning that house building is apparently slowed to its weakest level since May 2020, which is, you know, pretty significant. And lots of the reasons for that are unsurprising. Higher costs of borrowing and also just high inflation and build costs generally combined with a bit of a labour shortage. So it's kind of the perfect storm.
Yeah, I think it's something we'll sort of chat to Mette about shortly. But I think, as you say, in the conversations we've been having, not only with sort of clients and developers and planners, but also with politicians, they are finding it increasingly difficult to square the circle of how you have, you know, significant development in boroughs, much needed sort of home building, when land values are going up, when construction costs are going up, and when you have, you know, in some cases quite difficult policy requirements in terms of affordable rates and, you know, issues around height and density. It all sort of combines to make quite a difficult environment to get things built.
Yeah, and I think just focusing on the residential piece, you know, pretty much all campaigns, all boroughs, all political parties made housing a big part of the campaign. You know, we're going to provide more homes, more affordable homes, much needed across the capital. And I think you sort of square the policy requirements with the reality of trying to operate in this current environment. And you can see how things are very difficult at the moment. And it doesn't seem to be just residential development. I mean, you know, there's hardly any residential development coming forward in central London at the moment anyway. Mm. But when you look at office builds and office development, there was an article, I think, a couple of weeks ago in the Times that pretty much said lots of office developers have been sort of waiting for supply chain issues to resolve themselves, hoping that build costs come down slightly before they proceed. And, you know, all of this creates real problems for us economically, to be honest, because, you know, without a strong, vibrant construction, you know, sector, we're not going to deliver any of the spaces that we all need to live and work in. So huge challenges for the leadership of London at virtually every level, borough level, mayoral level, and of course at government level, to be able to help resolve some of these things. I think it remains to be seen how, you know, now the elections are over, how a lot of leaders are going to tackle this.
Yeah, and I think, you know, from a local government level, you know, talking to council leaders, talking to councillors, you know, they aren't really able to impact those land values. They aren't really able to have an influence over build costs and construction costs. And that really only leaves policy, you know, and how councils, you know, all these new administrations who are coming in with sort of mandates, how they're going to square that of, you know, commitments to building more affordable homes. Mm. In places it's becoming increasingly difficult to deliver them. So
yeah, I'm not sure the answer to a lot of these challenges is more policy, to be honest. I think you speak to everybody in the industry, they you know, that, while it's completely understandable that, you know, local authorities are trying to address some of the big challenges we've got, you know, more policy doesn't necessarily translate into more homes and more action. And
but potentially more flexibility on policy.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that's the great balancing act that I think a lot of leaders and councils have got to now think about over the next few years, because it's clearly tough, but there are opportunities within that. And I think, you know, flexible boroughs who focus on what they can actually deliver and what actually happens are kind of probably going to be the ones that are able to achieve the most over the next couple of years.
Well, on that note, shall we speak to someone who's in the driving seat on some of these decisions and find out how they're going to square that circle in Hackney?
Absolutely. Let's speak to Mette now.
Great. And I am delighted to say that we are now joined by Councillor Mette Coban, who is the cabinet member in Hackney. Mette, thanks for joining us. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. How are you? Good to see you.
Yeah, not too bad. I think in the interest of full disclosure, we should probably start by saying that we are old friends. We go back quite a long way. So I'll have to be particularly probing in my questions to make up for that. But how are you doing? You all right?
Yeah, good. The only thing is, Luke, obviously we don't support the same football team, but...
Yeah. Well, we avoid discussing that, don't we? It doesn't end well. So, Mette, let's kick off a little bit about you, because I think you are probably the busiest person in local government in London. So tell us a bit about you, how you got to where you are.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me on. So I guess, yeah, for everyone listening, my name is Mette. I'm from Hackney. My parents first came here in 95. So we came here in 95 as asylum seekers from Northern Cyprus. It's a country that isn't recognised as a country. We came here for some reasons that I won't get into. And I guess really being brought up, you know, we came to Hackney and Hackney was this very different world for us. You know, we came from a very small village to this place where, you know, one of the most, you know, diverse sort of boroughs and towns in the whole of Europe, not just in the UK. Yeah. You know, had very deep societal issues around like crime and, you know, just it's just a place that you couldn't really imagine to live in before.
Yeah.
And so, you know, by that nature, and I guess like growing up on sort of one of the roughest council estates in London, in Pembury, I became very political at a very young age. I started to question things around me. You know, why was it that no one lifted a finger because my youth club had shut, this place that I spend most of my time after school every day had shut down, but no one really cared that it was shutting down. And why didn't anyone care about that? And my dad always taught me to say, look, you know, either you get involved and solve the issues you complain about, or either you stop complaining about it. So that's why I stood to be a councillor, and I was 21 when I first got elected. Feels like a lifetime ago now.
How old are you now? Remind me.
I'm 29, going to be 30, but I'm enjoying every single day of that last at 29. So, I've been doing that for two terms. I'm a cabinet member in Hackney for environment and transport. So I'm responsible for everything, for making sure the streets are clean, people's bins are getting collected, the public realm, our response to climate change, transport, all the things that matter to people. And alongside that as well, I'm also the chief executive for a charity called My Life, My Say, which is all about trying to encourage young people to participate in democracy. So that's a bit about me.
Do you do anything outside of politics, Mete? You watch, you know, you lose football matches.
Unfortunately, we had a very bad last 3 weeks to the season. I'm an Arsenal fan, for full disclosure. We had a good good season.
From the depressed voice.
It wasn't a great end to it. But, you know, Chelsea hasn't had a great season as well. So let's see about that.
Yeah, we'll leave that there. But, you know, from sort of a series of defeats to some really solid victories, we had the local elections just over a month ago. Great result for Labour in Hackney.
Yeah, brilliant result for Labour in Hackney. You know, we, you know, the Labour Party in Hackney, and I give a bit of sort of context to people on the call, because most people wouldn't know this, but in 2002, actually, Hackney had a split administration. And as a result, actually went into public administration. We didn't have enough funds and the government had to step in. And, you know, since the Labour Party has been in control of Hackney, you know, you've seen a significant change in terms of, like, you know, it's gone from being one of the worst boroughs to one of the best boroughs in London and the UK to live in, one of the best performing councils. And, you know, we don't take our people for granted. You know, we're really passionate about our response to climate change. You know, we've got more than 50% social housing, which I know we're going to talk a bit about homes a bit later as well. But, you know, we're really, really proud of our record to make sure that we get everything right for our residents. And we're obviously very grateful that residents have put their trust once again in us to lead this next term.
Yeah, it's a ringing endorsement, I think, of what Labour's delivered in that borough, those election results. But what was your experience on the doors? Because obviously you'd have spent, you know, weeks and months out speaking to residents. What were the big issues? Was it national stuff? Was it local stuff? What was sort of keeping residents up at night?
Yeah, I mean, look, there's, in local elections, people are quite clued up about some of the local issues, and, you know, it's the little things that matter to them. You know, it's about, as I say, making sure their streets are clean. You know, when they want to contact the council, there's always someone on the other side of the line to sort of pick up and deal with their requests. You know, that sort of stuff really matters. But the one thing that really struck me, Luke, from this conversation on the doorstep, and also like from what I do with My Life, My Say as well, is that trust was at an all-time low. And partly because, you know, of the Partygate scandal and stuff like that, you see that happen at a very national level. People just feel very disinterested and disengaged in politics generally. And, you know, they hold everyone to account for it. And rightly so, they are quite skeptical about, you know, politicians when you knock on the door. You know, people have gone through a very tough 2-3 years with the pandemic. You know, the pandemic exposed so many and amplified so many deep inequalities across our society. So, you know, people did feel like, oh, well, you know, it's just another election. And, you know, what are you actually going to do for me? So there was a bit of that. And actually, when you look at the turnout, it wasn't so high. You know, we're still talking 30-40% in most wards. And that's not too different from other parts of London as well. So we do have an issue about, you know, how we can engage more people locally. But certainly, I think the top issues for people on the doorstep would have been trust in politicians, and not just local, that's national. Definitely the cost of living crisis and energy prices. That was huge. Yep. I mean, you know, you step out your house now, you spend 30 quid without even knowing what's what's even hit you or what you've got in your pocket in return for it. People are definitely sort of really struggling with the cost of living crisis. And then the other thing that was really big for us was actually, and people were really happy with it, and as a result, I think the Labour Party done really well in Hackney, was they were very happy with what we've done around public realm and transport measures to, you know, increase pedestrianised streets and make it easier for people to walk, cycle, take public transport, but also to help reduce pollution as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, it's one of those things. We've spoken to a few sort of Labour politicians. We had Sharma Tatler on from Brent a few months back. We had Danny Beals on from Camden. They were saying, you know, similar things, that actually for all of those big national issues that you touched on that really sort of dominated on the doorsteps, the cost of living, you know, Partygate stuff and that lack of trust, which, you know, I think damages all politicians and everyone who's putting themselves forward as an elected representative. You know, there is no benefit to sort of politics being taken in that direction. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't benefit any party really that happening. But the environmental side, you know, sustainability, you know, taking sort of green initiatives was a really prominent like feature of these elections, actually more so than we thought they'd be. You know, people are increasingly clued up about the role that councils and councillors play in delivering those measures and helping to tackle the climate crisis locally. I know it's something you've done a huge amount about. Well, let's run with that then. So you are one of the boroughs that has sort of been most prominent on the low traffic neighbourhoods stuff, and you've sort of been at the forefront of that with the council. What's your experience been of that? Have you had any sort of resident pushback? You know, how's it gone down locally, and why does it matter?
Yeah, I mean, so firstly, we declared a climate emergency in 2019. And for us as an administration here, we're very passionate about, you know, we know that for us, you know, the issue of climate action can't be separated from social justice. And that's because we know that many people, particularly from, you know, backgrounds like mine, who look and sound like me, they're more likely to suffer from living in areas with bad air pollution and as a result suffer with asthma and associated health risk. They're more likely to be suffering from the negative impacts of the energy market, because obviously we've got unsustainable forms of energy, which, you know, by, you know, political conflict or whatever, can, you know, has a negative impact on working class people. And it's people, communities like mine in Hackney that have to pay the price for that. But also they may be working in jobs that aren't sort of sustainable in the long term. So for us, it's always been a priority to, you know, help create a green dividend, which is about, you know, helping improve air quality, helping create more green, sustainable jobs for people to actually benefit from, but and also, you know, helping reduce energy bills for our residents. So we, you know, since I've taken over my role, it's probably been over about 14, 15 months now. Hackney has the highest number of LTNs in London. So it's 73% of eligible roads. I launched the first ever LTN on a sort of a main through A road in Church Street. It's the first of its kind in London. So it's a 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Bus gate, a road that had more than 10,000 cars every single day. And now it's got, you know, less than half of that. And, you know, the nitrogen dioxide levels were unbearable. And now it's, you know, the footfall has increased by 8%. Visa MasterCard transactions have increased on the street as well. So it's better for business as well. So actually, it's had a massive positive impact. I think what's really important with the LTNs is obviously it's got to be really well designed. So, you know, there are some parts where it may not necessarily work, and there's no one size fits all approach, but it's really important that you do all of the things, like, you know, doing all the mitigating measures for example, for displacement traffic, you know, speaking to sort of the navigation apps and making sure to TfL to make sure that the routes are redirected on time so people don't sort of end up going through the wrong routes. It's about making sure you've got the right proper engagement with residents and businesses before you bring these schemes in. And, you know, unless you get all of those little things right, then what ends up happening sometimes is you end up sort of, I guess, like, you know, not doing credit to the LTN by, you know, because then people then sort of react badly and then obviously don't, as a result, councils may have to sort of draw back from it. But in Hackney, we've seen a positive impact, 38% traffic down since we've introduced the LTNs in the zones. The boundary road traffic has gone down by 2%. Off my head, of 388 air quality location sites, 329 of those sites have significantly improved in terms of nitrogen dioxide levels. So it's everything that it's there to serve as, it's clearly meeting its purpose. And we've also seen that since we've introduced the schemes, a quarter more people actually now have taken up walking and cycling to commute to work since we've introduced the LTNs, because it's just more pleasant for people to move around. So clearly, it's having a positive impact on sort of our communities.
And it's one of those sort of policy areas that gets politicised quite a lot and ends up being sort of a campaign angle for particularly sort of opposition groups who are looking for a sort of easy campaign win. Because, you know, we've seen elsewhere in London, perhaps more so in outer London boroughs as well, where car usage is a bit higher, that, you know, low traffic neighbourhoods as a sort of policy approach come under attack. And it's quite easy to sort of galvanise local resident opposition to them because it's an easy sort of an easy win. It's an easy campaign tool. But it sounds like you've gone about it from sort of a ground up approach where you've got resident buy-in and actually people are leaning into it as an approach and enjoying it as a result.
Yeah, I think there's two things, right? Like for us in Hackney, it's like most people in Hackney, only a third of households have cars. So most people don't have a car. 87% of people in Hackney either walk, cycle, or take public transport. So they don't drive. The other thing is making sure you've got all the right alternative transport measures around it. So for example, you know, and you know, we've been doing this for a decade long. It's everything from, you know, 20 miles per hour to car-free development to how we imagine our car park spaces. You've got to make sure that you have the right, you know, cycle lane infrastructure for people to feel safer to cycle. You know, the right, you know, in terms of when you think about public realm footpaths, for example, for residents who are walking, you know, bus priority, like bus lanes, for example, you know, make sure they're 24 hours so that people can get around the borough with buses, zip car, you know, or like other rental schemes for cars. So people, what you can do is, again, it's like, you know, we'd much rather, in place like Hackney, we've got a lot of car clubs and it's really beneficial for people like myself, for example, right? I'm a young working professional. I've had a driver license actually for about 11, 12 years, never owned a car. But if I need to drive, I might just use a car club, for example, if I'm traveling somewhere further. And it's like having all of those alternative provisions, like the e-bikes, dockless bikes, you know, if you have all of those different things, then what you then do is you increase the alternative so that people feel like they don't need to actually own a car and they can do that. So, you know, I feel like in Hackney, it's worked really well, partly because going back to the statistics that I gave at the start, is that most people actually don't drive in Hackney. We suffer because we're quite a central borough in the London borough, which is surrounded by a lot of different boroughs. And there's a lot of flowing traffic. So 40% of traffic of trips that happen in Hackney neither start or end here. We're not saying to people, don't come here, see your family, see your friends and shop here. Of course, we want to do that. But also there has to be like a fair balance between, you know, that and also, you know, air quality. And we know that we've also got one of the worst air pollution rates in London.
So you touched on a couple of things there that are quite interesting. You know, talking about sort of the public realm and the infrastructure and things like car-free developments. And I think, you know, for a lot of our listeners, on the development side, you know, it's really interesting to understand the political priorities, you know, from something like your brief and how it feeds into the wider sort of policy approach of the council, particularly with, you know, development in mind. Does a lot of your work feed into the wider sort of council policy priorities? You know, when you're thinking about development, is that a big expectation that you're looking at car-free development, you're looking at how it benefits the sort of the wider community, public realm, that sort of thing?
Yeah, so with my role, so I lead sustainability for the whole council. So that's looking at the strategic aspect of it. And the way in which we see it at Hackney Council is we don't just see sort of climate change or environment as a sort of like an additional nice thing to do. This is now part of the council in everything it does across every service area. So, you know, one of the key things that I've been really focusing on within the council is making sure that we've got a strong climate literacy offer within the organisation. So every service area is brought up to that level. So that, you know, whatever we're doing across the council, whether it's from development to transport to, you know, whatever we do as a council, we just have to make sure that it's, you know, a bit like when you do like an inequalities impact assessment, you have to make sure that it also goes through that same level of proof when we look at its environmental footprint and its carbon footprint. So my role specifically around the housing aspect and development aspect of things is looking at, for example, what our offer is for retrofit and what our plan is for that. That's a big challenge that we have, and not just us, but it's really expensive for a lot of councils. but also it's making sure that on any new development as well, we sort of do it in the most sort of carbon friendly, least intensive way, most environmentally friendly way, yeah.
And thinking about, you know, I think it's something that every council is trying to get to grips with, you know, the housing crisis and how you deliver the homes that the borough need and that residents need. We were having a quick chat just before we started recording about, you know, sort of the housing waiting list in Hackney. I think you said it was 12,000.
12,000.
And, you know, so in terms of delivering the homes that you need to deliver in Hackney, what are the big challenges as you guys see it as an administration?
So I think for your listeners to firstly understand the type of borough Hackney is it's a very densely populated borough. It's not, you know, we've got about 280,000 people who live in Hackney. As I say, it's one of the most diverse boroughs in the whole of the UK. We've got very high levels of poverty and deprivation still among a lot of our communities. And we've got over 50% of our housing stock is social housing. So we've got, you know, huge issues around, you know, making sure that we've got good quality social housing for our residents living there. We've obviously got a big problem with the housing waiting list, which is 12,000 people. And the unfortunate problem that we have is obviously we don't have a lot of space to build new homes in. And of course, the government's support isn't adequate enough in terms of what we have to build for social housing. So there's definitely a wider sort of like London-wide or UK-wide housing problem, which obviously has its impact on Hackney. And that's the, you know, the pricing of, you know, rent and also the pricing of buying a home as well. And obviously the impact that has on communities more broadly. In terms of people feeling like a sense of belonging to their communities. So, you know, some of the biggest challenges for us in Hackney at the moment is obviously making sure that we're getting that right mix of housing, making sure that we're able to actually build genuinely affordable homes. With that comes the financial pressures. I know we were talking off calls and we're talking about the price costs of, like, you know, construction and all these sorts of things, which obviously has been impacted as a result of the energy crisis that we've recently just had as well. And a lot of that obviously spirals onto like a domino effect into this as well. We've just committed to building through our manifesto an additional 1,000 genuine affordable homes in Hackney for the next 4 years. So we've got, you know, plans to sort of accelerate that vision. And, you know, we've got a big plan around sort of our retrofit and looking at, for example, how we're going to, for our existing stock of homes, how we're going to help reduce energy bills for some of our most sort of in need sort of residents as well. And of course, we're still working very hard around, like, you know, how we improve repairs and, you know, how we can make sure that, for example, people living in social housing have the right level of provision around green spaces and all those sorts of stuff that they need as well. So lots of work to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, I told you that I would keep you no longer than 20 minutes and we are on 19 and 55 seconds. But final question for me, where are Arsenal going to finish next season?
Well, definitely top four, 100%.
Definitely top four.
Yeah, I mean, the transfer, the speculations are like really good so far, but, you know, they're only speculations. So
they always are. They always are. That's the problem. Basically, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, that's it from us. Thanks for listening to another episode of Poles Apart.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah, thanks for being here. We'll be back in a couple of weeks with another episode and another fantastic guest to bring you all the latest insights and analysis that we possibly can provide. But as always, don't forget to like and subscribe, leave a comment, share with your friends, listen to it with the whole family, and we'll see you all very soon.
Thanks a lot.
Bye 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 bye.
Bye.